Welcome to Lesbians Who Write with Claire Lydon and T.B. Markinson. Conversations about writing and lesbian fiction. Join us as we draw back the curtain on the writer's life.
Hello and welcome to episode 14 of Lesbians Who Write with me, your host, Claire Lydon, and the fantabulous T.B. Markinson. And I forgot to think up a really fun word for you today, T.B. So you're fantabulous, is that all right?
I like the word fantabulous. What's wrong with that one?
No, I would be happy.
It's a fun one.
Yeah, it's a fun one. So I forgot to think one up, having thought this was a great idea last episode. So next week we're going to be professional, everyone. I know you've been waiting for it for the last 13 episodes, but episode 15, the sex episode, we're going to be professional-ish. Before we get on to shout-outs and what we've been doing, let's do a tally, TB. How much cookie dough ice cream or cookie dough-ness have you inhaled and got lodged in your throat this week?
It depends on your perspective. It was a good week for cookie dough ice cream because, as we mentioned last week, this past Monday was my birthday. Friends have been taking me out, and I have had cookie dough ice cream on several occasions, which means next week I need to start running again. So yeah, I've had a lot. I have not had any mint chocolate chip ice cream, though, because when I go to fancier ice cream places, not that cookie dough ice cream is super fancy, but mint chocolate chip, this doesn't seem like it will cut fancy place.
You see, this is my point with mint choc chip ice cream. It's a bit common. It's a bit common in garden, isn't it? It's a bit like nothing. So I know all the mint choc chip hordes are rising up now and going, why I order? But, you know, just, I think, broaden your horizons. Go bigger than mint choc chip.
I'll try. It's a good thing to have in my freezer at home.
True.
But, yeah, when I go out, I do try. But I didn't vary too much. I mean, chocolate chip cookie dough is kind of my second thing, so yeah. It wasn't too wild.
Right. And did you have a nice birthday?
I had a fantastic birthday. It was a really nice. I went to Portland, Maine for a romance Maine writers retreat that started on Friday afternoon and went through Saturday night. But I met some really fantastic writers, and I have to admit the sessions, because I've been to a few conferences, and this was a very small one. I think there were only 45 of us in a room. But the sessions were fantastic and put together better than some of the bigger conferences I've been to. So well done, Maine.
Wow. So you're going to be filling us in with your fantastic new wisdom over the course of the next few weeks on the podcast?
I could definitely do that. I did have one disaster with the conference, because I spend most of my time in my office, in my apartment, alone, writing books and such. And I don't really interact with the public at large unless I go for my walk and such. But the one weekend where I was going to be interacting with people I've never met before, I decided to grow the most massive pimple on my forehead. It was ginormous. What is that about? One weekend out of the year, I have to have the most massive pimple?
It's, you know, it's the law. It's the law. It's like when you go on holiday, you always come on the plane. It's the law. It's just and get a big spot. Yeah. I've currently as well, I don't know if you can see it, I've got two spots on the end of my nose and then one on my forehead. So I don't know why, but I'm not going to any conference this weekend. So there's that. Let's look on the bright side. And from my side of things, Hamilton tickets, I've got to say, I've been a little bit out of the loop. I haven't been applying for the last week, so I haven't won any. I know. So, but it just reminded me, looking at our podcast, that I need to start applying. So next week, who knows, I might have won some. That would be terrific, wouldn't it?
I love that you start these new segments and then you just totally forget about them.
I think it's because I've been away, and then I went to my retreat and, oh, it was all a bit much. So, yes. Let's have our comment monitor, and then we'll get on to what we've been up to.
All right. We have six comments. The first one is from Gabby at lesreviewbooks.com, and she sent me an email saying the podcast is so much fun. Oh, she said that she finds the podcast useful not just for writers, but she's a blogger. And she took one of our tips about a mailing list, like offering something of value. And so now she, when you sign up for her mailing list, she offers a free guide that directs you to areas where you can get free and discounted lesbian books. So that's kind of a nice thing. And she said since she's done that, her mailing list subscribers have increased. So I guess we're helping everyone.
Yeah, and that's a really good point, actually, because it doesn't just work for writers. It can work for anybody who wants to get some kind of following. So good point, Gabby.
And Donna's back. She commented on episode 12, and she says she enjoys listening to our each What Have We Been Up To. I think that's because usually we are actively working against ourselves by growing pimples or breaking our shoulders or our hands. We like to keep people on their toes with our disasters.
We do.
And she appreciates that no matter what life throws at us, that we just keep on writing. So that's always nice to hear. And Claire, this is a shout out to you. She says she appreciated your floor-to-ceiling goal explanation and found that very helpful. Actually, several people have commented about your floor-to-ceiling tip last week, and I have even started implementing it. So thank you.
Oh, well, you're very welcome, and everybody's very welcome. I found it very useful when I came across that tip as well. So please to share the floor-to-ceiling love.
Yes, yes. And Stephanie on Twitter said the same thing, a light bulb went off when you started talking about your floor to ceiling. So that's fantastic. And then I heard from Claudia from Austria, and she's really looking forward to our, I think she's the one that posed the sex episode to us, and she's really looking forward to it. And she appreciated our dodging of why we won't record it. So I think she found some humor in that. And then Suze Snow, a lesbian author who's going to be involved in the IHL cell. I can't even say my own company name. Jeez. She says we're both hilarious, and she looks forward to the next episode, and she also likes mint chocolate chip ice cream. Sorry. But her all-time fave is birthday cake, and she gave me a tip. There's a place on Brattle Street in Cambridge, which isn't too far from Boston, called the Milk Bar, where she says they have the best birthday cake shake that I'm going to have to go try out because it gives me an excuse to try out a different flavor.
Wow. There you go. I have been looking into ice cream flavors over the past week because of the book I'm writing where the woman is running an ice cream shop. So I've come across some amazing ice cream flavours. None of them I can remember now, obviously, but there are some amazing ones. And if you read the book, you'll find them out. But I was also at the seaside at the weekend. So I came across a ice cream shop. They were selling things like candy floss, marshmallow. Yes. Do you know what candy floss is? Cotton candy.
It's cotton candy for Americans.
Yeah. Marshmallow. Or marshmallow, as you call it.
Do we?
Yeah. Spellcheck always corrects me when I try to do marshmallow. Or maybe it's the other way around. Anyway, there's an E and an A confusion between the UK and the US, which is pretty usual, isn't it? And, what are some other ones? Cherry Bakewell, Cafe Latte. And there is already a chocolate and honeycomb, so I think I'm going to have to try and seek that out. But I found a fantastic chocolate ice cream provider in the Cotswolds area. So read the book. There's going to be some delicious ice creams. And if you read You Are My Kind, my last book, everybody said that when they read it, they wanted some cake. Well, if you read this one, you're going to want some ice cream.
You should do like a challenge to readers. If they take a photo of them reading your book with some ice cream and send it to you, you can like send them a signed copy or something. And not all of everybody who answered, but they can answer a different way. Because that would get really pricey very fast if you had to send copies to everybody.
Are you trying to bankrupt me?
Yes, it's my secret goal in life. Bankrupt all other authors, so I just like sweep up big. All right, we have one final comment that came to email from Avery. She says she listens to the podcast every week and she enjoys it much. And we are inspiring Avery to write more. So give ourselves a pat on the back.
Woohoo! Yes, go Avery. Write some more. So let's get on to what we've been doing this week. TB. So I went off on a caravan writing retreat last week. So we were both at writing retreats last week. You with a spot on your forehead, me without. So that's good. Good to know, isn't it? And I went off with 10 other authors, 3 lesbian authors, and then 7 gay romance authors, and then 1 thriller author. And we all hired 3 static caravans, which frankly are bigger than most London flats. I wrote over the course of 2.5 days, so 2 full days and like a couple of hours, nearly 17,000 words. So pretty pleased with that. As I kept saying to everyone, it's not a competition. And I don't think I wrote the most. So, and it wasn't a competition. It's not a competition. But the good thing about it was I had about I think I came back with about three chapters of the book to write, and I have finished my first draft. So round of applause. Finished my first draft, bar the last sex scene. So that leads in perfectly, doesn't it, to next week's episode, which is going to be, what do we think about writing sex scenes? Sometimes they're problematic, clearly, but that's like any scene. But, you know, by and large, I have finished the first draft of this village romance novel, still yet unnamed. I'm very pleased with that, and that was a great thing to do. So this week, I kind of conked out when I got back on Monday. And then Tuesday, I wrote a little bit. Wednesday, I finished it. So, and then yesterday, I went to see my mum and dad. But I've been getting back into doing gym and meditation because I'd let those routines slack. And actually, if you let those things slack, as we know, in trying to be a healthy writer mentally and physically, it's a bad thing. So I've been trying to get back into those, which I have. So I've been starting meditating again. And right after this, I'm going to the gym for the third time this week. So I haven't quite got back into the habit of eating lettuce. Well, I am eating lettuce, but I am also eating Easter chocolate still. And I think I did drink a lot of wine at the caravan, because that's what you have to do, isn't it? When you've written for a long time in the day, and, you know, in both days at the caravan, the long days, the 7-hour days, I was writing over 7,000 words, and that's a lot. It's quite mentally taxing. And so when you come to the end of it and you go to have dinner, having a glass of wine, for me at least, if you don't drink, you won't be doing this, maybe you'll have a lovely bit of chocolate after your meal, but for me, a glass of wine with a meal, and then maybe another, and then, well, the bottle's open, so you may as well finish it. That's that's what happened afterwards. So that's been my week, really. And today I was doing some admin-y tasks, because I've decided I'm not going to go back to the first draft, because I think it's a good thing to leave a little period of time between finishing it and then going back to it and starting again. Because I know there are things that are going to have to change. I've already made notes of, I already know I'm going to have to write at least 4 or 5 new scenes where the story is kind of twisted a little bit. It's not twisted, obviously, but it's just changed. So today I was getting some admin stuff done, so I've actually set up my web shop today, so now you can buy direct from me. Amazing. So that was a little bit of a technological challenge this morning, but I've already overcome technological challenges, so I'm feeling super.
That's fantastic. You've been busy. Wow. I'm exhausted just listening to you. But I also am working on my Cotswolds novel. I am editing the final draft before I send it off to be proofread. So by the time this episode goes out on Monday, I'm hoping by Monday night my time to have that draft done, send it off, and then I don't have to think about it for a week or two. Because even though when you send it off for the proofread, it still comes back and you still have to tweak it some, mm-hmm. which is so annoying. It's like the novel never is actually finished. It
never.
Just keeps going.
Keeps annoying and giving.
Yeah. And I still have one more sex scene to write too. So looking forward to it.
See, this is perfect, because do you think by this time next week we'll both have written those errant sex scenes, and then we can talk about it on our podcast next week?
Yes. No, I didn't plan it that way, but now that you said it, that does make sense.
I didn't plan it that way either, but we are demonstrating perfectly that sometimes you're just not in the mood to write a sex scene. Maybe we should write a live sex scene on the podcast. What do you think?
Oh my gosh.
That would be like really a bad thing to do for a podcast. So don't worry, we're not going to do that.
I think people might want it, but I don't know if I can. I would just giggle the whole time. But also what else I've been working on this week was iHeartLesbic, the website I run, is starting a massive sale on May 27th, so this upcoming Monday. And there are over 100 authors involved and well over 200 books involved. And it took me a very long time to format the 2 sale pages. I underestimated how long it would take. And it took me 3 extra days than what I thought it was going to do. So, but it is getting finalized as we speak. Everyone's proofreading their book entries. And so that will go live Monday, May 27th.
Woohoo! And I have not sent TB my book, so she's frowning at me like now, going, are you going to send a book? And yes. I get special dispensation because, you know, we're mates, right?
Yeah, everyone else had to have their information to me on the 10th of May, but, you know, the 26th, what Doesn't matter.
Well, that is terrific. So let's move on to the big question of the week. And I actually don't know how I'm phrasing this. I've got here, should you be doing audiobooks? I think the answer is yes. So there you go. Thanks for listening.
We're done. It's Friday. Let's go.
Should you be doing audiobooks is the question. If you are writing ebooks, should you be producing them in audio?
I'm going to do some stats here. I was listening to Joanna Penn's podcast, the Creative Pen podcast, and her episode number 423 from March 25th, 2019. We'll put the link in the show notes.
Yes, we will.
She did some, she was at the London Book Fair previously to recording this, and she attended some seminars about audio, and she supplied some stats that I found extremely interesting. So I'm going to try and get through them without butchering them too much. I'm not very good at reading notes, but we'll try. This is why whenever I lectured when I was in college, when I was teaching, I never actually had notes. I would just go off on, because I can't do it, but we'll try. So I prepped the listeners well to expect a complete disaster.
Me too. I'm ready.
So she said that 54% of the listeners of audiobooks are between the ages 18 and 44, which is really interesting because this is a difficult age group that generally don't read ebooks. It's one of those age groups that we want to tap into more because they're obviously younger. But when you look at stats for ebooks, they're generally older. So this is a very interesting stat to start off with, because you might be tapping into a whole generation of readers or slash listeners that you wouldn't have had access to. This is the market everybody wants. Like if you run a TV show, this is the market advertisers want. This is the age group you really want to gear towards. So if 54% of the listeners are that age, that is something to take into account if you are pondering whether or not to go into audiobooks or not. All right, our next stat was 83% of audiobook listeners have also read a book in the last year or bought a book or an ebook or a print. So that doesn't mean they're just only listening to audiobooks, but that may be their favorite choice. And this is something good for us since we have a podcast. Podcast listeners listen to 2 times as many books as non-podcast listeners.
Wow. So if you are listening, which I assume you are because, you know, you're listening, we've both got audiobooks out. So quick, rush out and listen to them all. Top tip.
There you go. She also mentioned that if you have a podcast, it's a great way to market a book, especially if you have a book in a small niche. If you target other podcasters in that small niche, like, I don't know, gardening in the rain. I just made that up and that makes no sense. But I'm really good under pressure. That's what I was telling people.
Do you think there's one called Gardening in the Rain Naked? I think that might be quite
I
nice.
Hope so.
Yeah.
I love this video. No, I don't, actually. I don't love this video. Never mind. Disregard that. All right, and then another stat I found interesting was 30% of audiobook sales are non-correlated with ebook sales. So again, it's opening up another avenue of revenue for you. She made an interesting comment saying that with ebooks, a lot of the authors, we have to worry about piracy sites where I get messages on Twitter and Facebook from readers a lot who say, hey, I noticed your book's on this piracy site. And I always caution everyone, be like, don't go to the piracy site because it's really just a way to infect your computer. And there's nothing we can do about it. We can't stop these people from doing it. But for audiobooks, at least the bad guys haven't figured out how to pirate audiobooks. So that's another interesting thing she mentioned. And then I found it interesting. She was talking about the future of audiobooks, the future of listening, and according to the seminar she listened to, it's expected to rise in the future with, you know, people are listening more. They have more connected homes. I have a device sitting on my desk that I can order to play music for me and such. So, but she will start going off if I say her name. But I have that in my rooms in my house, and you can also order her to start an audiobook. So people are more connected with cars, with the self-driving. In 3 to 5 years' time, pretty much people are going to be able to listen more. You can listen to audiobooks anywhere, and I think people are starting, like, now when I go out for my walk, when I see people with headphones on or they're running or something, I'm like, are they listening to a podcast? Are they listening to a book? Are they listening to music? Because you never know anymore. So she's thinking that audio is something really, really to consider, that it may be part of the future. And we thought for a while ebooks would see a more of a surge, But they haven't. And I'm not saying ebooks aren't worthwhile. They are. We definitely make a living from them. But they haven't had the exact surge that people were predicting. But they think audiobooks may have more of a surge. But that is, I'm a historian, so when I start discussing the future, I get a little uneasy. Something to consider.
You're not a futurist. Your face then was brilliant. I get a little uneasy, she said, looking like she just sat on a bed of thorns. So I've got an interesting stat for you. Similarly, it's from a Joanna Penn interview, the one she did on a podcast called Unemployable. And we're going to come back to podcasts we listen to in another podcast, one of our podcasts, because I think it's interesting what you listen to. Anyway, she was on this podcast and she was talking about audiobook stats. Now, I'm going to say the word penetration, so let's all just get over it and giggle now. By 2025, global internet penetration is going to be there, basically. And I don't really understand all the internet things like 5G, but apparently that's imminent and that's fast. So by 2025, the world is going to have very fast internet in its hand. And they're going to be, and all the developing markets, so the ones that really don't have, Amazon's only in 12 different countries, but the ones that really don't have all the big players in there yet are mobile first and audio first. And so audio is only going to get bigger because it's going to be able to be streamed quicker. So many more people are going to have the option to buy it. I have also heard of some publishers doing an audio book before they do an ebook and print book. And I think that they're just a little bit too early. They're like the super duper early adopters. I've heard of big publishers doing it. I've heard of a lesbian fiction author thinking about doing it. That was Claire Hyten Stevenson. Hi, Claire, if you're listening. But I know that she was thinking about doing an audiobook before ebook or print. I don't think I would think about doing that yet because I don't think we're there. I think what you've got to remember with audiobooks is that we haven't been going that long and it's still quite early on. They reckon it's sort of about 2011, 2012 as where ebooks were. So ebooks came out in 2009. And 3 or 4 years down the line, that's where we are with audiobooks. And so it's going to take probably at least a decade before they mature. So we're in a really exciting place with ebooks, basically. If you're a reader, there's going to be more and more. And if you're a writer, the answer is yes, put them out into the world. There are ways to do it, but it's only going to get more audience. And I think that the cost of doing it, because I think the barrier to doing it, if you're a writer, is the cost. I think the cost is going to come down. We're in the early stages, and it will come down, I think, within the next couple of years. Look at me being all futurist.
I'm squirming.
TV's currently hanging onto her chair going, no, don't talk about the future. Let's look at the past. No, I think that audiobooks, it's really exciting. I'm a huge podcast listener. I love listening to podcasts. I love doing this podcast. Audiobooks, similarly, I wasn't sure, frankly, if I was going to be an audiobook listener because I love reading. I love the... I don't mind ebook or print. I'm not fussy on that. But I love just the art of sitting there in a chair or lying in bed and reading a book. And I wasn't sure if I wanted it in my ears. And there's only some certain times of the day when I do. But going for a walk or going to the gym, if you haven't got a podcast or if you can actually listen, you can be listening to a different book and reading a different one. Whereas I don't know about you, but I can't listen. I don't generally tend to read two books at once. I generally tend to read one book at a time. TB's shaking her head. But if I'm listening to an audiobook, then I can listen to that and then I can read a book because it's different. Yeah, so I'm excited about the future of audiobooks and I think that everybody should be getting theirs done, especially in the lesbian fiction market because there aren't as many in there. That's the plain facts. It's still early days in the audiobook market anyway. You will get people downloading it and listening to it, but in lesbian fiction especially there aren't as so many there. I think there's probably less than 1,000, I'd say.
It's not as big as other markets. Like I look for IHL for the new release newsletter because usually each week I have like 15, well sometimes some weeks I have, we'll say between 10 to 20 new ebooks to announce that have just been published that I've located, and I usually only have 3 to 6 audiobooks, but I have noticed an increase since this new year started, since 2019 started. But I have a question for you, because I have been listening to audiobooks way back in the day when they were on cassette. I was that nerdy kid who had the, what was it, a Walkman, whatever it's called? I don't even remember anymore. And I would either buy them, they were rather expensive, so I would buy them very carefully because it was something, it was an investment, or I'd get them from the library. So I've been listening to audiobooks for as long as I can remember. I love them. So when did you start actually listening to them?
I was not that nerdy kid. The first time I listened to an audiobook was about 3 or 4 years ago. And I was approached from my other podcast to review one. And so they gave me a free code on Audible. And the first one I listened to was Patience and Sarah by Isabel Miller. Isabella Miller. And it's absolutely fantastic book, but the audio just brought it to life. It was narrated by Janice Ian, who I hadn't heard of before, but she's a famous musician. I think more famous in the States. Do you know her?
I don't, but I have to agree with you. It all comes down to the narrator. I've listened to some audiobooks that the narrator just doesn't hit the right tones or anything. And then there's some where, like, even if it was a favorite book of mine before, and if I listen to the because I will read the book, and then if I find it on an audio version, I will listen to it again. And some of them are just so brilliantly done, and it almost becomes a whole new work, and you have a different pleasurable experience listening to some of these narrators. Some of them are just very, very talented.
Yeah, no, totally, I agree. I think that case in point being And Playing the Role of Herself by K.E. Lane. Is that right?
Yes, I think that's...
God, it's one
we
of my favorite.
This.
It's one of my favorite books. I'm just having a word, like a brain melt there. I think it's K.E. Lane. Yes, K.E. Lane. How many times have I recommended this book? Like, virtually every day. If you haven't read it, do go and read it. There was a Dog Ear Audio Studios, which is a lesbian fiction-only audio studio. They took a lot of time and care doing this, and Lisa Cordleone was the narrator. She is fantastic. What a fantastic narrator. And it absolutely brought the book to life. It's 14 hours of pure delight, and just thinking about it now makes me go a little bit goose pimply, and I want to go back and listen to it all again because she did such a fantastic job. Yeah, so it does depend on the narrator, but if you're a writer and you've got an audiobook, you've got an ebook and you want to turn it into an audiobook, what should you do?
I think you and I have gone different routes on this, so we can give different perspectives on this, because when I wanted to go into audio a couple years ago, and I was unable to, completely unable to, because I was living in Ireland, and Ireland said I could not make any money, which was not very nice of Ireland. So so while everyone else was starting to get audiobooks out in Les Fic, I was just sitting there like going, oh my God, I want to get into the game. I can't. They won't let me. As soon as I moved back to the UK back in, I think it was November of 2017, I started contacting some lesbian authors who I knew had gotten into the game, and I was like, how did you do it? Do you recommend certain narrators and such? And I ended up going the ACX route with the royalty split, because at the time, with all the moving costs, I didn't have the extra cash on hand to pay outright. And so for me, it was the option for me to use at that time with the royalty split. So what that means is you sign a deal with a narrator who produces the audiobook for you. And when you get paid, instead of making, I think it's the $4 per, this is on average, it's going to vary, $4 per book, you split it $2 each. You're both taking a risk, and the narrator's taking a bigger risk on you, I think, because it depends on how well your book's going to sell. So if you have a bigger following, it's going to be easier to sign on narrators to take a chance on you. I mean, I've done it that way. So there's downsides to this, because obviously you have to sign Amazon, really, who owns Audible. They really like being masters of the house or masters of the universe. So when you do a royalty split, you have to agree that the audiobook will be only available on Amazon, iTunes, and ACX for 7 years, which is a big commitment.
It's not small. 7 years. Sign here. Thanks very much.
Yeah. I mean, it's so much different from, I was surprised when I heard the 7 years. Cause like when you do KDP, Kindle Unlimited, it's only a 3 month commitment. And I was like, 3 months to 7 years. They've really gone bonkers on this one. But, so far it's paid off for me. So the way I view it from my end is it's extra money you're making from the book you've already produced, that you've already edited, and I think the only additional cost I had to pay was for my cover designer to make a cover ebook because you don't want to upload your usual cover because then they just stretch it out and it looks terrible. So please, if you are uploading audiobooks, make sure you get the right cover dimensions. Otherwise, it does look terrible on the website. Granted, I had to sign my life away for 7 years on these books, but I am making extra money. We'll see how it goes.
Yes, well, I prefer to pay up front rather than do a royalty split because basically I've been wanting to have control of the books and do what I want to do with them in future. For some of my books, for others, I've actually sold the rights. And would I do that again? Probably not. But I think that was a learning curve for me. So I've done 3 books so far and I've paid the narrator up front. So basically what that means is I audition a narrator, I hire them, I pay them a chunk of money to produce the audio, and then I upload it to Amazon, iTunes and Audible, and then all over the world. So I'm not exclusive to Amazon. You have to take a lower royalty cut with Amazon. So rather than being, if you're exclusive, it's 40%. And if you're non-exclusive, it's 25%. However, then that means you can sell all around the world in all other platforms. And I've just recently done a comparison of, is it worth it? Would you be making a ton more money if you stayed with Amazon? And the answer is no. With one of my books, I've made more money going wide. And with the other one, I've made possibly like 5-10% less. So for me, the pluses of going wide outweigh the downsides. With the London Romance series, I actually signed those rights over to Audible, and Audible Studios made those 4 books themselves. So they've got those rights for the term of the rights. So I don't have any control over that. And I have to say, if I was doing it again, I probably wouldn't do that. But at the time, I decided that I would like some help doing it, and it wouldn't cost me any money, and I'd get some royalties from it. So I decided to do that. It's a learning curve because I am the person who wants to be in control of all my books and everything about them. And if I can't take them and sell them where I want to sell them, that makes me unhappy and gives me a sad face. But it's a learning curve. It's something I did. I wouldn't do it again, probably. Never say never, because it's always nice to have somebody else do things for you and pay you money because they paid me in advance and they're going to give me a royalty and it didn't cost me anything. So there are upsides, but there are also downsides in that you haven't got the control of it. So that's what you have to, that's the classic. Do you want to go with a publisher or do you want to be independent? So half my books are independently published or in audio and they're all wide. And I think that's the route I'm going to take in the future. And it is a very long-term strategy, audio. If you do this, because you're looking at paying out, if you're going to pay up front, you're looking paying out probably between £1,500 and £2,000 per audiobook. So it's not cheap, but I've got the money to invest in my business and I'm seeing it as a long-term strategy. And I might not make that money back. Like one book, I made it back within 4 months. The other book, it took me just over a year. I might not make that money back in a year and a half, but I will eventually, and then it will start being regular income that I get from a book that I've already done. And so doing an audiobook, it's kind of a no-brainer. You will make the money back, but it won't be as quick as you make it back in ebook or print. Having said that, audio has grown and it was 9% of my revenue last year, which shows what a growing market is. To give you some perspective, that's the second biggest share. So print is about 6%, but ebooks are, if I had the numbers here, I would tell you, I think probably about 80%, maybe something like that, maybe 75. So yeah, as you can see, like audio is a growing market. And if you can afford it, get your own done if you're that type of person. But if you can't afford it, or if you don't, or if you want to share the load with a narrator, then actually royalty share is a really good proposition. And the other good thing about that is that your narrator is invested, and so then they will promote your book, because the more sales you make, the more they're going to make money too.
Yes, and some narrators have quite a following as well. So some of them are, especially in Lesbic, I noticed if you go to the Lesbian Audiobooks Facebook group, like some of them, like, as soon as they hear a narrator has a new book out, almost doesn't matter who the author is. They're like, oh my gosh, I love this narrator, so I need to listen. So that you do get that extra assistance, because obviously for selling books, ebooks, paperbacks, or audiobooks, visibility is a huge thing you need to consider all the time. You always have to think about visibility. So if you can sign on a popular narrator, it does help. I'm not going to say it's going to make you $1 million or a bestseller or anything, but it's another plus in your arsenal to break through that whole visibility barrier.
Yeah. And the other thing is, one other thing that I wasn't really that aware of until this year is that if you then get an audiobook done and you have your initial sort of burst of sales when you launch, which is fairly normal, and then they might die down and they'll just be sort of tick along. But I did a BookBub ad on Twice in a Lifetime, my standalone US-based romance. And off the back of that, quite a lot of people downloaded the audiobook because they could get it via WhisperSync. And so, which is Amazon's sort of, if you buy the book, then you can get the audio for like £2 or £3, I think. Maybe it's gone up slightly, but
it's pretty inexpensive.
Yeah. So I got a load of audio downloads because I'd promoted the ebook. So promotion of the ebook does promote the audiobook as well. So those are things that you can consider. You can do it via paying upfront or royalty share, and you can do it via ACX, or you can do it, which is Amazon's back end, or you can do it via Findaway Voices, which is a new kid on the block, which can allow you to go wide and publish all over the world, or you can do it with Audio Republic, which is another one that I've used. That one I've just switched to Findaway because they're offering a platform to sell your audio direct. That's still in beta. As I say, it's really early days with audio, and so everyone's still sort of trying things. They're throwing things at the wall, see what sticks. And so it is an exciting time. And, you know, if we did this podcast 2 years down the line, which we might commit to that, TB, hey.
Hey, we should.
You know, we might be saying all different things. But at the moment, I'm looking forward to starting to sell audio direct and see what happens there.
Now, when you say sell audio direct, you don't mean on your website?
No, what that would be via Findaway Voices. So I'm going to be distributing. I go direct to ACX for Amazon, Audible and iTunes. And then I distribute everywhere else, all around the world, to libraries and to all the other streaming services and shops all around the world via Findaway Voices. They're my distributor. And they've also got a audio direct platform where I can upload my books to, well, they've already got them in their system. And then I can direct people to that site. They'll give me a landing page, a shop site. And then I can direct readers to that and I can put them on sale.
Oh, you can actually control the price?
I control the price.
See, that's another thing with Audible that listeners may not know about, because like when we upload a paperback or an ebook onto the KDP dashboard, which is the Amazon backend of how we get the books on Amazon, we can set the price. Now, Amazon sometimes can lower the price if they find it at a lower price on a different platform or something like that. But usually, I've noticed, at least with my books, it's usually the price I set. But when I approve an audiobook, I have zero control over the price. So they determine with file size and delivery and all the other factors I probably don't even know that goes into their equation. So they determine what the price is, and you have zero control over it.
Yeah, so that is a big thing. Amazon are, let's face it, a little bit stingy with their royalties for audiobooks. An ebook, they'll give you 70% royalty. An audiobook, the most you can get is 40. It started out, I think, as 80 or 90, and then they suddenly dropped it. I wasn't around in those halcyon 80 or 90% days, but 40% is pretty rubbish considering it costs quite a lot to make it in the first place. So Findaway coming in, and other people I'm sure will come in, is disrupting Amazon's stranglehold on the market, which is can only be a good thing. And you can control the price. And there are other sort of things coming in where you can do sales on audio. So it is an exciting market. However, saying that, if you've got one book, I wouldn't be rushing to do an audiobook. What I would be rushing to do is doing book two, book three, and then maybe after that, maybe book four, I'd think, you know, have I got a bit of a following, should I start doing audiobooks? So I think that they really are worth doing. But if you've only got one book out, I'd concentrate on getting a bit of a back catalogue out there first and then start doing the audiobooks. Would you agree, TB?
Yeah, that's a good point. Unless you really are a writer who only wanted to write one book and that's your ultimate goal, then yeah, of course, if you're only going to write one book, then get the audio out. But if you are in this for the long game, we've mentioned this a lot. Both Claire and I think have the same opinion that this is a long-term goal. with not just audio, but with our writing career, because we want to be in this game for a while. So a lot of stuff we're doing now, we're building blocks to sustain our career over the next few decades. So if you are going to write more in a series, or if you're just going to have more to your backlog, I would wait a bit before you start going to audio, because once you get a listener who really likes your style, who only really listens to audiobooks, they're going to want to look for more of them. And if you don't have them, they may forget about you in the long run, because a lot of books come out. You may want to release them in a timely fashion. I have my Woman Lost series. I think I should know this off the top of my head. I think it has either 6 or 7 books in the series. I should know this, but I'm failing right now. Did I mention it's really hot in Massachusetts right now and I'm melting?
TB is melting in Massachusetts. I'm melting in Boston. Well, we're not sure if we're both having perimenopausal hot flushes. So answers on a postcard. What do you think? Do you think we're melting because of the heat or because we've reached that time of life?
I think you just said that you were melting in Boston. Aren't you in London?
Oh, am I melting in Boston? No, I'm not in Boston. I'm not in Boston.
I know for a fact that it is menopause for me. I have the blood test to prove it. I know I'm only 45, but I went into menopause early, people.
Look, we like to share things on this podcast, and TB and I have discussed this at length, because I think once you hit your 40s, perimenopause and perimenopause and menopause are topics that, you know, you'll try not to speak about too much, but you will. So I think TB's already there. I'm maybe taking my first stride. So, you know, let's see. We'll keep you updated on the menopause and the perimenopause.
How many hot flashes have you had, TB?
So, TB, is there anything else you want to say on audiobooks and not menopause?
Well, now I'm on the spot again, which we know it's not good for me. But I would say seriously consider audio, especially if you have more of a back catalog. There's different options if you want to go, if you want to pay up front, like Clara's done, or if you want to go royalty split like I have done, but it is something you should really sit down and think about and come up with a plan if it is something you want to go forward on. I think it will pay off for you. I can't promise this. Please don't think I'm promising, but it does. It has paid off for me, and it's become a decent amount of income for me each month.
Yes, we can't promise you, but I think that the opportunities for audio are only getting bigger. And we should say as well that the other option, if you don't want to do a broad share or pay up front, is to get a publisher for audio. And you can get audio only deals, as I did with Audible. The other key publisher in the space is Tantor Media, and I know a lot of lesbian fiction authors publish via Tantor, and a lot of them publish via Audible as well. So you can also get a publisher if you don't want to do the whole audio thing yourself. So there are your options, and I hope that you found this helpful, and I hope that if you are just an audiobook listener, you've enjoyed learning about the back end and what goes on for us authors, getting our books into audio.
One other thing we should say is that there is another great resource if you're a lesbian fiction author or listener or reader, and that is the fantastic website lesbianaudiobooks.com. So that's www.lesbianaudiobooks.com, and on that site they have virtually every lesbian fiction novel that's currently in audio, and you can search by title, by author, by genre, by all manner of things. So that is a brilliant resource. So if you're a writer thinking, what other audiobooks are out there? What other narrators do I like? You can listen to some. And if you're a reader, there's the whole world at your fingertips in this one website, which is fantastic. There's also a lesbian audiobook Facebook group, which is attached to that website. So if you want to know about the new releases that are coming out, the books that everybody's really loving, then go and join that Facebook group, because it's a brilliant resource as well.
So that's it for this week, and join us next week when we're going to be discussing dun, 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 writing lesbian sex scenes. You looking forward to it?
I'm already laughing. This one was hard when I had to read stats. How am I going to get through talking about, should I even mention clits and all that stuff?
Oh, clits and slits. All right, then. Should I edit that out?
I think you have. have to leave that. Come on.
All right, then. We'll see you next week when we'll be talking writing lesbian sex scenes and menopause. All right. See you then.
Thanks for listening to Lesbians Who Write. Listen in every week for more conversations on writing and lesbian fiction. And you can make sure you never miss an episode by signing up to our newsletter at lesbianswhowrite.com. Also, if you could take a moment to leave a review wherever you listen to this podcast, it would help more people to discover us. Thanks so much, and see you next time.